Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Hi everybody, producer Al here. It's time for another TSFP Presents re-release here on the Monday podcast feed. And this time we talk about a club and an era that we have a lot of affection for. It's the Sevilla side of the mid-2000s that did so well in Europe and came so, so close to winning La Liga as well. Remember, for lots more of this kind of thing, you can join us as a patron over at patreon.com/TSFP.
Hello and welcome to another edition of TSFP Presents Classic Teams. Today, we're talking about a pretty special team. And I have to say, I have to make a sort of a confession here. Everybody knows, I think most people who listen to the podcast know, I work for Real Madrid TV, you know, Vamos, Hala Madrid, etc. But the first team that really sort of captivated me and got me in love with Spanish football
was Real Oviedo.
Was Sevilla. And it was particularly the Sevilla side that we're going to talk about in this episode, the one from more or less 2005, 2006, 2007, maybe 2008 as well. I was living in Granada at the time. I did my year abroad, 2004, 2005. And at that time, Granada were in the Tercera division. They weren't, it wasn't even Segunda B. They were basically playing in a park. And I'm not insane like you, so I wasn't interested in going and watching them. So I started sort of following Sevilla and seeing how they were doing and going down to Sevilla. I had some friends living there, and it was great. And it was a great team, and obviously they went on to have really tremendous success over the next few years. So it was a good time to be watching them. We're going to talk about the 2005-2006 season and the 2006-2007 season because these particular seasons were monumental in Sevilla's history. And I think that 2006-2007 season is probably the most successful, their best season ever.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, 2005 was their centenary year. It was an important one.
And they thought it was their centenary, yeah, and then they realised that it wasn't actually their centenary because they had actually been founded in 1890.
Yeah. Part of this is there's a kind of ongoing argument between Sevilla and Recreativo about the foundation of Sevilla.
Who's the oldest team?
So it was sort of their
We're going to say it was their centenary, although it's quite possible it wasn't.
Yes.
But they started it with a new manager, Juan de Ramos. Tell us a little bit about Juan de.
Juan de Ramos is, I really quite like him in a sort of dry sort of way. He's he was a manager who'd been around, and it was only really at Sevilla that there was, I mean, there was always a sense that he'd been pretty good, and he'd been quite successful wherever he'd been. He'd been pretty good at Rayo, been pretty good at Espanyol. It was kind of at Sevilla that it all sort of came together. But some of the things that he did particularly well, which is the insistence on good physical condition, the willingness to play 4-4-2 but very wide, to really push the idea of wingers, really fitted in. He's a person who I think it would be fair to say that he doesn't inspire a huge amount of warmth in the sense that he's not massively charismatic.
No.
But I think there is a sense that he's quite straight. I think there is a sense that he's fairly fair in his treatment of players, and that he is fundamentally a footman. But I think he's become a footman who's kind of disengaged with Spanish football to an extent, because, well, you know, as tends to happen, you go to Real Madrid and then it's done now.
He came in, didn't he, at quite an interesting time, because he followed Caparrós, 5 years of Caparrós, who had taken over after Sevilla's relegation in 2000 down to the Segunda, and Caparrós had taken them from the Segunda, up to European football. Yeah. So Juan de Ramos had something. There was something there to build on.
Well, you look at the previous season. So they win the second division, and then their next four seasons in the first division are 6th, 6th, 10th, and 8th. So
it's pretty good.
So you know, this is a team that achieved, and I think both Sevilla and Betis, who went down at similar times, both had a broadly similar idea, which was born as necessity as much as anything else, which was to start bringing through younger players. Mm. And Caparrós is really, really important for this Sevilla team. And I think it is certainly true that he lay a lot of the groundwork for Juan de Ramos. And that in a way that some of the things that Juan de Ramos believed in, perhaps slightly less so than Caparrós, the aggression, the intensity, the kind of insistence on really, really...
Caparrós wasn't aggressive and intense?
No, Juan de Ramos was slightly less so.
Ah, I see.
So he
right.
took on yes. what Caparrós had done
yes.
And maybe softened it a fraction, but Caparrós was all about that. And for example, you know, the person who I think was the player of the Sevilla team, and we'll come on to him properly in a minute,
Dani Alves.
Dani Alves tells incredible stories of the way that Caparrós handled him, and that Caparrós handled him in a kind of, you know, absolutely in his face sort of way, and yet at the same time, right, I'll look after you, I'll make sure you're okay, I'll make sure you're happy, but at the same time, so help me God, you will do what I do. And yet even Caparrós gave up on Dani Alves and gave up on saying to him, stop crossing the halfway line. And in the end, the kind of the quality of Alves was sufficient that Caparrós said, oh, okay, look, just run, because you're good at this.
Friend of the podcast, Kay Murray, I remember when she was here and we were working together, she sort of referred to Joaquin Caparrós as the manager most that you'd like to have as your dad in La Liga.
Yeah.
It would be tough love, though. It wouldn't be...
Yeah. Maybe. I wonder if there is that... There is perhaps... I wonder if it's because...
Maybe it was as a woman, because she was like, he'll look after you.
I was just about to say that. He's the protective dad, isn't he? He's the dad that... He's the dad that you know, anyone messes with his daughter, he will absolutely have him. You know, he's taking that guy down. But there's something about, obviously, the Michael Keaton things we've been through this a million times. Looks so much like
Michael Keaton. He looks really so much like him.
Yeah. There was some footage, and I admit that, you know, this doesn't maybe fit because this was when he was at Athletic Bilbao, but it was still about him, where they actually wired him up to a heart monitor during a game. To see the incredible range of heart rate during the match and the extent to which he kind of almost completely lost control. And this heart monitor, and there's a moment where he's running up the touchline, and because of course he knows he's wired up and they've got the microphones on him as well, and there's a moment where he says, I'm going to break this bloody thing. And he was really, really tough, and he tapped into a tradition that Sevilla perhaps hadn't had for a while, which was the defence at least has to be incredibly frightening. And I know actually it's not really true of this team, because this team certainly in the first season isn't really about Javi Navarro and Pablo Alfaro, because Alfaro's on the bench for a lot of it.
Well,
but certainly Javi Navarro's there, and they become this kind of dirty partnership at centre back. But Javi Navarro's already there, and that's very much that kind of identity.
So they go from this sort of intense Caparrós side to a slightly more nuanced team under Juan de Ramos.
And but he had to deal with losing a couple of key players as well when Juan de Ramos started. So you had Julio Baptista that summer, who had scored, I think, 38 league goals in the previous two seasons. He goes to Real Madrid. Mm. Sergio Ramos obviously goes to Real Madrid as well, who was young but had been a part of the team.
And in a way, that sets up the kind of this discussion perfectly, because Sevilla, while we're looking at these 2 years, which are their most successful years, in a way is defined by the way they ran the club. And obviously that brings us always round to Monchi. And those two players, the departure of Baptista and the departure of Sergio Ramos, and the fact that should have been a massive problem for Sevilla, was in fact symbolic of their success and symbolic of one of the things that they did, which I don't think any other club has done so well, which is that they made a virtue of losing their best players. They normalised the process of sales, which means with very few exceptions, and actually Sergio Ramos is one of them, players who depart are not hated for it.
Mm.
Players who depart are seen as, you've played part of the role, we know that we can overcome this. Had they not overcome those two, then that would have been a problem. But I think it's difficult with hindsight to do justice to just how good Julio Baptista was and how important he appeared
to be. Because later on he became, not like a joke, but he never replicated the success he had in those two seasons.
And in part because the mechanism of that team suited him so well, so it was quite direct, playing off a forward. And then he was nicknamed the Beast, which possibly is a nickname that these days people would shy away from a little bit more, but he would just tear through defences. And it was power, but intelligence with it, timing in terms of the arrival, and that was a kind of the beginning of, this is how Sevilla play. They will keep going for you. They'll be relentless. They'll be very, very that word we always use in Spanish use and we don't have an English
vertical
version. Vertical.
Perhaps then he was the focal point of that team, but then the focal point of this team in attack, Freddy Canute.
And this was part of it. I remember writing about this, and I remember writing about how the Canute option was a curious one and didn't really fit. And it was a curious one and didn't fit, A, because he was nothing like Baptista, who had been the spearhead of this team, you know, bombing through and, as I say, really tearing through defences. Canute was, all right, he's big and he's tall and he's strong, but he was all subtlety.
I have never seen
a player as good on the chest as Freddy Canute. I think he's the best chester of a ball I've ever seen.
I think we might have mentioned that in 21st Century.
I think we might have done. And so he played in a much more subtle way. And also, his goal scoring record was actually pretty poor. And he comes to Sevilla and he's brilliant. The style of football suited him better. The way that Sevilla played, the way they built that team around him suited him better. And he played up front, sometimes with Fabiano in the hole behind him, a lot of time with Fabiano alongside him, a lot of time with Renato in the hole behind him. Luis Fabiano was
Saviola another was still
player.
There.
Saviola
as well.
Was still there in that first season. Saviola was really quite important. Obviously, by the second, far less so.
I mean, yeah, these are some of the names that we've mentioned. Obviously, Jesus Navas enjoying some of his best years as well. In that 2005-2006 season, then they finished fifth in the league, but they win their first ever European trophy, beating Middlesbrough 4-0 in the final. What do you remember of that final?
And the final, I just remember them being incredibly superior.
So much better.
I mean, a lot. Just almost embarrassing. And of course,
I mean, it was incredible that Middlesborough got to the European
absolutely.
Final.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. Let's not knock Middlesbrough. Although, of course, there was a sensation. And obviously, I say this as someone who's writing for a British newspaper. That
were you there?
No. The sensation that Middlesbrough were, you know, all right, it's Middlesbrough and it's amazing and all the rest of it, but Sevilla, you know, they're not one of Spain's big teams. Well,
also,
they could be beaten.
It wasn't a bad... I've got the Middlesbrough team here. It was Hasselbank and Viduca up front. You had Rochenbach, Boateng, Morris and Stuart Downing in midfield. Frank Quadru at fullback. Gareth Southgate at centre-back for Borough. Okay, when I say like that, it doesn't sound like a great team, but there was some quality in
there. There was. And they weren't a terrible team by any means. Admittedly, the really good Borough players, Ravanelli and so on, Juninho, they're not there anymore. But there was a good team. The other thing is, you go through that Sevilla team, so you've got Alves, Navarro, Dragutinovic, Adriano. So Adriano ends up at Barcelona, of course. Alves ends up at Barcelona, of course. Pep Martí and Maresca in the middle, although actually a lot of time it was Maresca with Renato. And Renato played a curious role, a role of a player who you never really thought was really important. But then you actually looked at the decisive moments and he was involved in really quite a lot of them. Then, of course, Jesus Navas on one wing, depending on how they played, you know, the other wing kind of would rotate through various options, and then Canute and Luis Fabiano. And Luis Fabiano is another player who, his record, he'd been in Europe twice and failed both times, and Sevilla rescued him. And there was that sense of part of what Monchi did was not just find good players, but then find and create the environment in which those good players would succeed.
Talking about that UEFA Cup run, one of the best moments, and probably one of the best moments of this Sevilla side, I was watching it on YouTube earlier on, the semi-final against Schalke, extra time, the Antonio Puerta goal. If you haven't seen it, go and look it up. The cross comes in from the right-hand side, Puerta takes it first time from just inside the area, outside of his left foot, and it curls into the far corner. And the commentary, certainly on the clip that I was watching earlier on, I mean, Spanish radio and football commentary is always exciting, but the commentary of that goal, it's pretty spine-tingling, actually, and especially, obviously, because it's...
And that goal was seen as emotional at the time, as you say, but with time, it's kind of taken on a greater significance. And Puerta, you know, Puerta and Adrián on the left-hand side, and there was a real sense that, you know, that Puerta is going to be a great player. And he really was going to be a great player, I think. And the symbolism and the, obviously, the sadness fundamentally, but the symbolism of everything kind of that he represented was really quite powerful. And that's a really, really big and symbolic goal, as, of course, is the one that Palop scores himself.
The following season in the UEFA Cup run against Shakhtar.
Moving on to that season then, it starts with... Barcelona being beaten by Sevilla 3-0
in the European Super Cup.
In the European Super Cup.
And again, talk about great teams. That Barca team. If you look at the Barca team that started that game, that was full on Messi, Eto'o, Ronaldinho, all the great players.
This is not a nothing team.
3-0. 3-0.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns.
Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The holidays have arrived early with Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale. Upgrading window coverings can be a minor project with a major impact. Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. Browse premium blinds, shades, shutters. We have your patio covered too. And get unlimited window treatments installed for one low cost. Free shipping and Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale now. Save up to 45% plus premium doorbusters. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
They finished third in La Liga, and they were 5 points behind the eventual winners, Real Madrid.
And
they
I think
were close.
That was Sevilla's best ever points total in the Primera that season with 71 points.
It's also one of the great tragedies of modern Spanish football that Sevilla team didn't win the league.
Mm.
They were the best team in Spain that season.
Mm.
They also were, obviously, a team that won the Cup and the UEFA Cup.
Mm.
And they were trying to fight on three fronts. And obviously it's easy to say with hindsight, but perhaps if they hadn't gone so far in the Cup, because they were genuinely limping towards the finish in that season. They drew away at Mallorca on the penultimate weekend. And I actually made a note of this because I was really struck by it. And I kind of looked for it. And away at Mallorca, they had a moment where I think it was, they had two players missing. Let me see if I'm going to actually find what I wrote, because here we go. So Adriano went off after 10 minutes. Navas got injured in the warm-up. Dragutinovic was sent off. Freddy Kanute, and I remember that season so clearly, the last 7 or 8 weeks, Freddy Kanute could barely walk anymore. I mean, this team really did limp to the finish line. They were the best team in Spain. I remember them going to the Bernabeu and Dani Alves having a miss really, really late on, or trying to reach this chance really late on and unable to do so. And if he scores that and it goes in, that's it, they were league champions. At least that was the mentality we all had. And yet, even with that, they get to this penultimate game of the season. You win away at Mallorca, you're done. You're going to win the league. And they drew 0-0 against a Mallorca team who, by the way, had already beaten them that season as well. So, you know, blame anyone, blame Mallorca. And who I believe were then the team who went to Real Madrid on the final day and were 1-0 up at half-time and lost 3-1 for Real Madrid to win the title. To win the most ludicrous title ever, by the way. How that Madrid team won that title is just incredible. And very, you know, very exciting. And there's a real sense of epic about it. Loads of late goals in the last 10 weeks of the season. But that Sevilla team was brilliant and should have won the league.
I was looking at your team of the season in La Liga that season, Sid, and there were four Sevilla players in the 11. Can you remember which four they were?
I'm guessing that Alves would have been there, obviously.
Obviously.
I'm guessing that Palop might have been.
He was indeed.
And
you're missing a defender and a midfielder.
Well, if there's another defender, then it's probably Navarro.
Yes.
And the other one, a midfielder?
Yeah.
Maresca?
No. Maresca was
Paulson.
In your team
Paulson.
The previous
Christian
season,
Paulson.
And Paulson was in your team
Christian
the season
Paulson?
That year. Yeah.
As you
should have put them all in.
As you mentioned, they did win the cup as well against Getafe at the Bernabeu.
Kanute scoring
the winning
back
goal.
Back when the Copa del Rey final was occasionally played at the Bernabeu.
Yes,
and that was Getafe had knocked out Barca in the semi-finals in some crazy game where Getafe beat Barca 4-0 in the second leg, having lost 5-2 in the first leg.
Isn't that the game that Messi
scores
that
ridiculous goal?
And then Getafe beat the goal in the second leg.
I remember a Sevilla supporting friend of mine telling me, you know, what a great day it was going to the Bernabeu. But he couldn't remember anything. Just so drunk.
I
can't remember anything. It was
that's
great.
So
they won that, and then they won the UEFA Cup as well to win three titles in one season, the most successful season in their history, without doubt. Beating Espanyol on penalties in the final in Glasgow.
Do you guys agree with me? I'm sure the Sevilla fans don't care, but is it somehow dissatisfying in a European competition when in both the semi-final and the final, you end up playing against a domestic rival? Because they played Osasuna in the semis and they played Espanyol. It doesn't matter when you win
it's amazing to think that it was Osasuna, by the way.
It's not what you want from European competition, is it?
I think you're right. It's not what you want from European competition. And yet, if you ask Sevilla fans of all these years in Europe, they probably quite enjoyed that late victory. It turned out to be a victory with the NBA goal at Valencia. When was that? 2 years ago or 3 years ago? I can't remember now. But yeah, I think it is a little bit. But it's still, anyway. it's still the UEFA Cup, and the fact that, you know,
it was in Glasgow as well. Yes. It wasn't like it was in Spain. So that's true.
And a pretty great final. You know, 1-1 after 90 minutes, 2-2 after extra time, penalty shootout. Palop
being the star.
Three penalties. And again, we mentioned the goal in the earlier round against Shakhtar, but go and watch that goal as well. Because it was late on in the game, it was an equaliser. The celebrations are fantastic because the entire bench runs onto the pitch and mobs him as they're celebrating.
Which is the way it should be. That's what celebrations are supposed
to be like.
And
yeah, then as I say, to go on and save three penalties
in the shootout
in the final.
And they're just an extraordinary, you know, as I say, just an extraordinary team. And the way that, I actually think they kind of helped make the UEFA Cup feel important because they kind of took it on as their own. And obviously that's something that's not just about these two seasons. It's about what comes next and the three in a row with Unai Emery. And in particular, Unai Emery stressed this. I remember Unai Emery telling me, I went to interview him before, must have been before the final against Liverpool, and him saying that when he came to Sevilla, and he, you know, this is someone who always talks about the importance of every game, that there's a glory in every game, that there's a sense of enjoyment, that it doesn't matter if there's not an objective to play for, but everything matters. It doesn't matter if, you know, it's a lesser trophy like the Europa League. Every game has an importance because it's about the moment. But he said that even he, despite having that mentality, when he turned up at Sevilla from Valencia, talked about the significance of getting the Champions League, and that was the target and all the rest of it, and that Europa League, well, yeah, I mean, it's there and we'll do what we can. And it was them saying, No. Mm-hmm. The Europa League, we do this. Mm-hmm. We go for this. We make this ours. And 3 years in a row, they did. And that is the legacy, in a way, of that 2005-06 season, 2006-07 season. And this is a team that, I saw the stat the other day, I'm going to get this wrong now, but I think it's 14 finals in 10 years they played in.
Mm.
If you add them all together, I'm assuming...
Like Super Cups as well. Yeah.
Talking about big moments from that 2006-07 season, Sid, tell us about Juan de Ramos getting hit by a bottle and hospitalised.
Against Betis. And the thing was that he wasn't just hit by a bottle, he was hit by a bottle of water that had been frozen. So, I mean, effectively being hit by a brick. I mean, you know, a frozen bottle of water is a pretty bloody hard thing. And and there was a real sense after that of, right, we've got to stop this and this is terrible and all the rest of it. But there was also a kind of, this is an isolated incident mentality. And it wasn't isolated at all at that point. Things were getting thrown all the time. Admittedly, most of it was largely harmless. You know, the paper aeroplanes, which I still don't still see a problem with. But people would roll up their sandwich tinfoil and throw them at people. I remember being at Rye and watching
kids.
The odd lighter, the occasional coin. I remember seeing kids throw Chupa Chups at people and that sort of stuff. And I think that was actually a moment that did change.
Which we don't condone.
No, and I think
when
you've
eaten your bocata, do not throw your tinfoil at anybody.
And I think that was a moment that kind of changed that mentality a little bit, because there was a sense of, oh, this actually can really do some damage. And not only that, because fundamentally what was different about that was that the aim was true. You know, that someone had good aim for once. You know, it's not that it hadn't happened
before.
Well,
also, I mean, like you say, you know, a frozen bottle of water, presumably that was premeditated, right? Or was it...
I don't know whether it was that or they'd bought it frozen outside. I don't know.
It is hot in Seville. So.
It is very hot in Seville. It's amazing it hadn't melted.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But Juan de Ramos, so Juan de Ramos was this curious manager who basically... I remember writing about the secret recipe of this Seville team. It was quite literally a secret recipe. They were a team that used Dr. Escribano, who's a famous endocrinologist in Seville. I've met him. I met him. I had dinner with him once, and he spent the whole dinner telling me not to eat that and not to eat the other. And I was thinking, Christ alive, if I was a footballer. And then he starts.
It's
eating,
a kidney specialist, by the way, for the non.
He starts eating. He starts eating almonds, and he was going on and on and on and on and about almonds. And I was thinking, do you own a factory of these things or what? Factory obviously not being the right word because they don't get fabricated, but you know what I mean. And you know, kind of a processing plant for these things. But they came up with these kind of half-time shakes, which were kind of...
almond shakes?
No. They were actually vegetables and stuff and tailored to each individual player, and they made quite a big thing about it. Now, that wasn't the only thing, but what I did do is it played into this idea that this was a team, possibly before this current era now, where you watch footballers now and they're really stripped down. This was a team that was really stripped down, that was very agile, very fast, very direct, that played effectively with two wingers on both sides, because both fullbacks went and both wingers went in very, very straight lines, apart from Alves, who would kind of... Alves, bingo, ding, number two, who would kind of come across the pitch diagonally and play one-twos with people and stuff. And they were a team that you know, other sides couldn't deal with, which I suppose is part of the reason why they didn't win the league, because they were starting to run on empty. You know, they were, and you know, for another team, it might not have mattered. For a team that could rely on one moment of class or quality, it maybe didn't matter. This was a team that relied partly on being relentless.
Juan de Ramos, of course, brief reign in charge in a way, a couple of years, off to Spurs in October 2007. We all know that didn't go terribly well.
No, one of the first things he did at Spurs was change the diet because he was like, wow, how on earth can they...
Yeah,
can they,
no
can
ketchup.
They, yeah, yeah, no ketchup. And remember his great phrase, he said, we walked in, was like, who got married?
Yeah.
Because this looks like a wedding buffet.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, him and Marcos Halvareth, who was his fitness coach, they're going, what the hell's this? And I remember he got caught out with a guy called John Alexander, I believe, who was a secretary at Spurs in the Alfonso Trece Hotel in Seville.
Lovely hotel
there.
And
denied it. They denied it and they said this wasn't happening. And that summer he didn't go. That it was because it was during the summer and he didn't go.
Mm.
And he ended up going about 6 weeks later.
Yeah, he went in October.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, and that wasn't the end. But it was the end of this particular...
Yeah, it was a sort of slight lull, but I mean...
Because
this is
Manolo Jimenez took over.
But exactly, and Manolo Jimenez was very different, and you know, it goes through a kind of a couple of shifts and changes.
It was sort of back to the Caparrós style.
Yeah, Manolo Jimenez, well, the famous chant was, Jimenez, Jimenez, que cojones tiene?
Yeah.
Jimenez, Jimenez, what bollocks you have.
Mm.
And he was very... I mean, he was a little bit basic, shall we say, a bit primitive in some of his approach, but he's
won
done very well, by the way,
won
in Greece.
The Greek championship last season with Ajax Athens.
Absolutely, yes.
And then left and got to Las Palmas and got sacked. But yeah,
yes, that is true. But you know, they went for a few shifts. But the underlying thing that we were talking about before is that process of identifying, buying, and providing an environment for players really worked. They went off the rails a little bit in terms of the success of their signings when for the first time they had money and they started spending that money and it sort of didn't work. You know, Didier Zakora. The striker they bought who turned out to be an absolute disaster, they bought him off Levante, whose name now escapes me. He wore his socks quite low. I've forgotten his name. Crap. And you know, so Chev Anton, who was, by the way, in this team, it didn't quite work.
I remember he scored
an amazing overhead kick, I think, against Real Madrid, the Uruguayan. And they sort of went through this spell that it wasn't quite working, but they're still fundamentally bringing good players through. And it's still just the idea of Sevilla being one of the best six or seven teams in Spain until this last decade was a bit bonkers. I mean, this is a team that hadn't won the league, had only won the league once, and that was back in 1946, had not won any trophies at all since the, I was going to say Copa del Rey, of course it was Copa del Generalissimo in 1948. So, you know, this is a team with a huge, huge 50-year period of, nearly 50-year period of winning nothing, that then goes and starts winning loads.
Well, that's the thing, yeah. It had historically had quite a lot of ups and downs, but now we think of Sevilla, and really it was this Sevilla that established them again as being, like you say, sort of maybe the fourth or fifth or sixth, you know, best.
And that sense of continuity, as I say, because underpinning all of this is Monchi, and underpinning all of this is the success of you know, look at some of the players, like Alves and Fazio and Adriano and Baptista and Rakitic and Poulsen and Fabiano and Carlos Bacca and even...
Keita.
And Keita. These are all players he signed and sold. I remember working out a team with him, sitting through a team going, right, let's do your kind of perfect 11. A team that had cost him less than 20 million euros to buy and earned him almost 190 million euros in sales.
Mm.
Yeah. And you know, and that's plus then the youth team as a go, like Sergio Ramos and like Jesus Navas and Diego Capel even. I mean, we forget about Capel, but for a while Capel was a really good player. And so, you know, there was a shift at institutional level which underpinned all of this as well.
So that is Sevilla, classic team, 2005 to 2007. It was a side that underpinned future success as well, because we could have talked about the three consecutive Europa Leagues under Unai Emery and Super Cups as well that they won subsequently. But anyway, we condensed it into this.
Yeah, and it's a slightly different type of team. But some of the things that, I mean, one game in a way that always kind of almost brought everyone to see Sevilla was that time when early in David Beckham's time at Real Madrid, went to the Sancho Pizjuan and got absolutely torn to bits. And everyone,
not for the last time.
Yes.
Because Real Madrid consistently get torn to bits.
That's another legacy they've left, this idea that, right, you go for Madrid.
Mm.
You don't stand there and say, oh, they're quite good. You go for them.
Yeah, and Barcelona as well.
And Barcelona as well, absolutely.
Yeah. Right, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for listening to TSFP Presents Classic Teams. Have we got one more
left? We might do one more. We'd like to do a nice, neat little series of eight, and we've done seven. So we'll decide on one more.
We have
to
decide on which team it is.
Mm. Yes, we're open to suggestions as well, so keep the suggestions coming. We have done quite a broad spectrum of classic teams, but we are open to suggestions for our final one. So let us know. See ya.
Cheerio.
Bye.